when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
You precious Blood River Radio supporters and all you new listeners coming on board, I'd like to thank you, all you people out there that support us with your hard-earned financial contributions. I call them sacrificial donations. I'd like to thank you so much for hanging around, for keeping us on the air. It's not easy, I guarantee you. But anyway, we have a fellow here. I've said he's probably almost as old as I am. He's a globetrotter. In fact, I would say, I'm not going to say where he is. He may not want me to. I'll let him do it. But I'll just say he's our globetrotting intellectual warrior. And his name is, well, you can probably guess, is the one and only Paul Fromm. He's calling in from another country today. And I have no clue what he wants to talk about. But the Mark Tommy, the warrior, this incredible warrior, Mark Tommy, he's still on with us. It's going to be like the first hour. It's going to be Mark and Paul. I'll ask a few questions to Paul. But I like to get out of their way and let those people do their thing. And they do it so well. So how are you doing? How are you doing, Paul? Do you still have jet lag?
No, I recover fairly quickly from that. I'm in Italy at a conference of nationalists, and it brings together American, Canadian, British, and of course Italian nationalists. I don't want to say too much more, but I had my introduction to European crime. I arrived on Thursday morning. I took my flight out of Toronto around the supper hour on Wednesday, but, you know, the time change. I got into the downtown area on by train from the airport, and I was in the railway station trying to find the right exit to try to find my way to my hotel. I knew it was within walking distance, but, you know, I probably looked a little disoriented. I was didn't look too pathetic, but anyway, this I would say middle-aged woman in what I thought was a uniform, but I now think you can sort of do a make-believe uniform and look official. Anyway, she asked if she could help me. Well, actually, she didn't ask. She grabbed, I have a suitcase on wheels, so she grabbed a suitcase and she's pushing it along, and she said, well, where are you going? So I had to get out some paper from another bag. Took a bit of shuffling and so on. So I finally told her. And then she called over this younger woman, and I guess told her to take me there. She gave the Valmy address on Google Maps or something like that. So the girl wheeling my suitcase around. She gets partly lost, but finally we get to the hotel. And, you know, maybe 10 minutes away, if that, probably even less. So it wasn't a big thing. So I said, well, what do I owe you? Because I thought, well, I don't think this is really charity. I mean, it's awfully nice if it was, but I figured I owe her something. $200. I said, what do you mean $200? Oh, the other woman told me. I said, she never told me. Oh, yes, she did. You didn't hear. No, I hear pretty well. And so I was right outside the hotel, and of course I was kind of jet-lagged. If I'd been thinking more carefully, I would have gone into the hotel and let the concierge take care of it. anyway, this hustler ripped me off. What I did tell the concierge in the hotel about, he nearly flipped out. He said that, you should never have done that. I should never have done that. But that's what comes from being in a high trust society. I mean, I didn't completely believe this was charity, so I was just trying to help a stranger, but part of me believed it. Well, that was really stupid. Let me tell you, that would not happen in Japan. If somebody offered to help you, this is not a scam. I've been to Japan a number of times, and I have nothing but admiration for those people. Now, who ripped me off? Well, they were not colored. I think the woman who put it together, the older woman's a gypsy. The younger woman didn't look particularly like a gypsy to me, but I could be wrong. I told some of the Italians here, and they were they commiserated with me and said, obviously, the city is just full of criminals. They're mostly foreign. They're either gypsy or other, immigrants. And they're all scamming. It leaves a bad taste how rotten our societies have become. Anyway, that was my little tale of woke.
Well, you are quite the globetrotter. It's just been a couple of weeks ago you were in Japan. Before I turn it over to Mark, I'd like to make a comment. I'm very pleasantly surprised. The spirit of nationalism seems to be spreading, even though the Japanese are a long way from being Aryan like you and Mark and I. At least they are trying to buck the international Jewish system, the Brotherhood of Satan, like Jesus Christ told them. And we've said this 100 times over the radio, probably 1,000 times. So St. John 8:44, when Jesus Christ told the Sadducees and the Pharisees if they were their father, the devil. And the Japanese know that all too well. And I'd like to say glad to see. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, the Japanese, they come from a high trust society. So that's the only way a crowded place won't work. Otherwise, it would be complete chaos and parts of the third world. So they're very clean people. And they're very honest. I've been in a couple of dark alleys outside of Tokyo on a previous trip. And you might wonder, what are you doing in a dark alley? Anyway, I was went into a restaurant, and I sat down right beside some Japanese at a nearby table. And they said, you shouldn't stay here. The food's not very good. So they said that there's a really good little fish place around the corner. Well, around the corner is down an alley. It's dark. Nothing sinister, but it's dark. I never felt afraid. And I found the place because there was a lighted fish out in front of it. Wow. So the lighted fish, their advice was indeed good to a complete stranger, and there was no ripoff, and the waiter didn't say, oh, I see a gaijin, that's a white man, for coming, I'll charge you twice as much. And I never felt afraid. I have felt afraid in certain American cities. And I felt darned afraid in some of the third world places I've been. I mean, not always. I don't want to exaggerate. But you and I know almost every American city has some no-go areas.
You got that right.
You shouldn't be open up. You know what I mean.
Yes. Mark, would you like to chime in there, buddy?
Hey, I was going to say, Paul, it's getting to the point where if you go to any large American city, you're taking your life in your hands, no matter what part of town you're in. Because while there may be certain areas that are always occupied by the denizens of crime, in this day and age, they're mobile enough that they can travel to other parts of the town now too and everything, you know, so, it could happen to you anywhere. You know, I've told people before, that I don't like to go to Birmingham, Alabama. It's about 50 miles south of where I live. And I always say, if I have to go to Birmingham, I not only carry my pistol, but I carry an AR-15 and extra magazines, because every day somebody down there gets shot.
Same thing in Memphis.
Well, I wish I could do that in college. One of the things about high trust society.
Paul, we'll take our first break. We got to take a break. This is a short break, though. It won't take long. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, folks.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something. Dear Blood River Radio family, I'm so grateful to have these two fellows on the radio. And you know what? I'm really pleasantly surprised and upbeat to hear Paul talk about what I was saying during the break. I'm going to shut up after this brief introduction. What he was talking about, it seems to be a global/worldwide awakening of white people. And I think Dr. Hill and Mark alluded to that point clearly on the first hour. But I'm going to ask these fellows during the break, both Paul and Mark, is there a worldwide awakening of white people, and are we heading to a nationalistic birth? Are we, Mark? What do you think? What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, I think we have to.
Yeah.
It's encouraging to see the signs of it happening all over the place. I think we're a little behind the curve here in the U.S. Only because our problem with these third world people has not reach the critical mass level that it has in Western Europe. Like we talked about earlier, places like Ireland, England, France, Germany, and other places like that, where it's not safe to walk the streets anymore. You know, they're trying to impose these their Sharia laws, and hell, they've even got Muslim policemen on their police forces and stuff now, you know, and telling people they can't own dogs, you know, and stuff like that. So it hasn't quite gotten to that point here. So it's still, we're still a little bit behind the curve, but it's very encouraging to see that. And you know, I've argued this many times over the years as a Southern nationalist, is that if you look at the history of the world and take the meaning of words in their proper context, and I've confessed this many times too, I'm a word nerd. I like to know where words come from and what they really mean, because so many of them are misused now. But the word nation, its original and true meaning has nothing to do with an organized political state. It has to do with genetics. You know, it comes, the English word nation comes from the Latin word natio, which means to be born. So that means there's a blood element to this. You know, the American Indians very famously always called themselves the Cherokee Nation, the Sioux Nation, you know, the Comanche Nation, etc. It's because, yeah, there are lots of Indians out there, but they all knew the differences between one another. And I've argued the same thing for the white world as well. You know, an Englishman knows he's not a German, who knows he's not a Frenchman, who knows he's not a Spaniard, who knows he's not an Italian. And it's perfectly natural, and I think even theologically ordained by God, that, you know, your nation is your people, your blood relatives and the people that you live in community with, who share a common history and culture and religion and all this kind of stuff. And it's only natural that people want to be with and form a community with other people who are like them and have interest in common. And, you know, under the dispensation, we could all figure out ways to get along with one another for the most part, but we still recognize the distinctions between one another. So if we're coming back to that understanding of nationalism and, you know, being proud you're German, being proud you're Southern, whatever the case may be, I'm happy to see it. And God give us more of it, and soon.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, well, I agree. If I may go back to the notion of a high trust society, these are all almost always homogeneous nations, because really, you're all cousins, really, and maybe not, you know, absolutely scientifically, but you're all in some way related. And well, you know, there are places where people steal from their own family. There's a strong taboo against it. I mean, nobody considers that, well, that's okay, oh, he's so clever. And the less you have a homogeneous society, the more likely you're going to get the attitude, I'll take care of my family, but everybody else is fair game. That's the way it is in much of the Middle East, which is why in places like Pakistan, there's so much marrying your cousin, which is really bad genetically. And the Pakistanis in Britain, there's so much, so many birth defects, and mental retardation is a huge problem for their social health care. But it's not particularly because they're immoral. It's because you're likely to be able to trust your own family. So if I marry my cousin, she probably, or her family, will probably not rip me off because, you know, we're all sort of family. Well, that's pretty bad genetically. But that's one of the many problems with immigration. And when you no longer become a homogeneous society, there's no longer that trust. Like when I was growing up in an almost all white suburb of Toronto, middle class, my mother, who is not a particularly trusting person, would sometimes leave the front door unlocked when she was around at the back working in the garden. Now, you wouldn't do that today. You would be insane, even in an area where there's not a lot of street crime, because if your neighbors are not non-white, there's a building of non-white welfare parasites a few blocks away, and that's exactly the situation in my old neighborhood. If my mother was alive today, she would no way leave that front door open, because 200 yards away, there are buildings full of Somalis. Do I have to say any more? In a homogeneous society, in a way, people police themselves, because you get a bad reputation if you were seen to steal from somebody else, because really you're stealing from your cousin. You're an immoral person. Whereas in other societies, and it's actually your peers would actually think well of you if you ripped off a stranger. Oh, that's good. You just don't rip off your own family. There's so many big arguments against the massive third world immigration that our treacherous elites have imposed on us the last half century. But that's another one. To think that in the major American cities, there's certain areas where you've got to be really careful. You shouldn't probably, if you're white, be out at night, or if so, you better be in your car with your windows locked. And race is everything.
Amen. You know, yeah. Mark and Paul, I was going to throw this in here. You know, in the first hour when Dr. Hill was on, Mark, I think it was, brought up this new phenomenon of teens taking over in a lot of large cities. And this gets right to race, just gets right to white nationalism. And I'll make this quick. But I experienced, I almost got caught in a situation like that. It's been about a month ago now. I was over at the park here in Memphis, where I exercise a lot. It's a very, 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 very large park. And I saw some officials, park rangers, the sheriff deputies, and they asked me, was I there an hour earlier? And I said, no, but you could see all kinds of, broken glass and bottles thrown down on the ground. They said a number of 200 to 300 to 400 teens, and they did mark, like you said, they used that term teen. When they said teens, I knew exactly what they were talking about. They were talking about niggers. A large crowd of feral Negroes were out raising hell in the park, and they had the officials there, the park rangers and the deputies, had to make a line between the feral black animals and the small white children playing on the swing sets, and this, when they come with the teeter totter, seesaws, whatever you talk about, where you call it, wherever you want to call that. And that's typical of non-white behavior. But yes, you're absolutely right. I wish and hope and pray, Mark and Paul, that this could be the beginning. What Paul's talked about, he's been in Japan, he's been in, which is not white, but they're not black, and they're not Jewish. He's been in Italy. Dr. Hill talked about an uprising in Ireland. So there you have it. Back to you, Mark.
Yeah, one of the, I was watching a video of a news report about one of these teen takeovers, and they interviewed one of the feral savages briefly. And he said, "Oh man, it's all about just us just getting together and letting us be black."
And that's true. They're just being black. That's what they do. That's what niggers do. You know what? My mother-in-law said that's all they can do. They can be nothing but niggers, because that's what they are. A nigger can only be a nigger. That's all he can be. It's like a snake can only be a snake. I got to shut up.
And that was the first thing that popped into my head when I heard him say that, is that, you know, he just indicted his race for what they are, you know. And for it's maddening for white people to pretend that they're not what they are, you know, because they do so at their peril. And it's not just the Negroes, it's people from the Middle East and from Asia and other places who come from these kind of places Paul was talking about, where it's celebrated for you to be a criminal.
We got to go to a quick break now, Mark. This is bottom of the hour break. Long break for people. You got 4 minutes. Be back in 4 minutes. Don't stay longer.
How How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
News this hour from Town Hall, I'm Mary Rose. Three-way talks with the U.S. and Iran are underway in Pakistan.
Negotiations began between the United States and Iran on Saturday, days after a fragile ceasefire halted fighting and brought both parties to the table in Pakistan. A U.S. delegation led by Vice President J.D. Vance and an Iranian delegation led by Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bashir Kalibaf each met with Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif earlier Saturday. Meanwhile, Israel struck more targets in Lebanon with at least three people killed Saturday morning, the conflict causing thousands of deaths and disrupting the global economy, particularly through the closure of the Strait of Hormuz where oil tankers are stuck. I'm Julie Walker.
President Trump weighed in on the talks with reporters yesterday at Joint Base Andrews.
What would a good deal look like for you?
No nuclear weapon, number one. You know, I think it's already been regime change, but we never had that as a criteria. No nuclear weapon. That's 99% of us.
Strait of Hormuz as well?
Yeah, but that'll open up automatically. The answer is yes, but the strait will open up. If we just left, the strait's going to, otherwise they make no money.
President Trump is angry with NATO allies over the Iran war, and the future of the military alliance is in question.
The president's uneasy relationship with NATO took a turn for the worse during the conflict with Iran when allies refused to assist in the U.S. and Israeli-led war. On Wednesday, Donald Trump met privately with NATO's Secretary General in the Oval Office. No media coverage of the White House visit was allowed, unlike previous visits. Afterwards, the president was still fuming, writing on social media that NATO wasn't there when we needed them, and they won't be there when we need them again. Greg Clugston, Washington.
More on these stories at townhall.com.
In today's fast-paced world, professionals face endless projects, deadlines, competition. To thrive, you need mental clarity, sharp focus, and reliable memory. That's why the same company that brings you Relief Factor created ThinkFactor. ThinkFactor is designed to help you think clearer and perform better daily. It's a powerful blend of nutrients that supercharges your memory and sharpens your focus. You can stay on top of your work and outshine the competition. After a couple of weeks of taking ThinkFactor, I noticed a dramatic difference in my clarity, my focus, even my memory. And you know what? The longer you take ThinkFactor, the better the results are. If you've ever felt mentally foggy or struggled to keep up with everything on your plate, well, ThinkFactor can help you reclaim your cognitive edge and thrive in your life. Call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF, or visit ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, to order ThinkFactor. Call 800-4-RELIEF or visit ReliefFactor.com. Your first bottle, just $19.95. ThinkFactor. Think clearer, perform better daily.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Are you watching what's happening in our country and asking, what can I do? Join the John Birch Society in Salt Lake City, June 6th, for a powerful one-day conference. The day includes a host of respected speakers, two meals, and meaningful connections. You'll gain clarity on the issues and walk away with practical steps you can take to your community. Reserve your seat today at jbs.org/SLC26. That's jbs.org/SLC26.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should. then please say so with your money as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. Listen, I'm 79 years old. I'm going to make this brief because I don't want to interrupt our two precious guests that are on here. Well, actually, our other co-hosts. Like I said, I'm 79 years old. I've been in the Deep South all my life. I've been outnumbered by blacks all my life, and I've learned something, and I've learned it the hard way. I was drafted during the Vietnam War in the early '60s, and I saw blacks there. But it's one thing I've learned. Blacks, and I don't care if it pisses you off, whatever, but it's in their genetics. They are totally different from whites. Now, there are some, that's not to say there's not some white trash. There is. More than I would like to admit. But by and large, these blacks, if you do not keep them in control, in the statistics, the crime statistics bear me out, they commit, if you could get the blacks out of the society, and now with all these other colors coming into this country, you would reduce the crime rate to a pittance of what it is right now. They're violent, and I'll tell you something I had to learn the hard way. Coming up in South Memphis, when I was in my preteens, and I thought the blacks were just some wonderful. I played football one time. They were my great friends. I found out the hard way. They didn't feel the same way they did that to me that I felt toward them. I'm going to tell you what, people. It's genetic. It's in their genes. They hate white people. They really do. It's in there. I've learned that over and over and over and over from the streets of battles of South Memphis to Fort Polk to Camp Bullis. To Nam, you name it, it's in their damn genes, and they hate your guts, and I hope you don't have to find out the hard way. And I'm going to shut up and go back to you, Paul.
Yeah, and that's why the survival strategy of the South after the Civil War was segregation. The two societies would get on along best if they were as much as possible kept apart. It made perfect sense. It was not the great crime against humanity or whatever it was pitched at in the 50s and 60s or so-called civil rights movement. It was not. It was a method to keep as much as possible the peace. And, of course, places that didn't have that problem were very critical. Like in Canada, I remember the time growing up in the 60s at school and university, Canadians all were so judgmental and all the racist stuff, and why do they treat the Negroes so bad? And it's easy to make snap judgments when you don't know what you're talking about. and I've seen the same in Canada. People in the big cities, there's this racist attitude toward Native Indians that they're considered drunks, and many of them, unfortunately, involved in incest and neglect of children and so on. Oh, how can people make such judgments? Well, when you live in a community where there are a lot of Native Indians, you begin to change your mind because it's right there in front of you. But we've been the victims of a Marxist Jewish propaganda for a century or more, trying to make us feel bad or guilty for wanting to protect ourselves, and segregation was a way to protect for white Southerners to protect themselves.
You're absolutely right, Paul. It was a masterful propaganda campaign to try to turn the rest of America and other places around the world against the South, and they still do it to this day. And they do it the way that most people do when they're trying to accomplish an objective like that is they take the few exceptions and turn them into the rule. My mother and father grew up in the segregated South. And my mother talks about how, you know, they got along, but they worked in the fields together. My mother grew up on a farm. She said we all worked in the fields together, but, and, you know, they had their water barrel, we had our water barrel. And at the end of the day, they went home to their place and we went home to ours. They had their schools, we had ours. You know, there was no real animosity for the most part. And that was the general rule of how life was in the segregated South. You know, but what they do is they take the few exceptions of people who go out of their way to be inhospitable, inconsiderate, whatever other term you want to use. And then that's what gets portrayed on the, that's what got portrayed in the news and in TV shows and movies and everything is, oh, every Southerner is a horrible racist who hates black people and treats them awful every chance they get. And that's not true at all. You know, it just didn't happen that way. And, you know, for example, here in Birmingham, the FedEx delivery driver who used to bring packages to my office, his dad was a police officer under Eugene Bull Connor back in the early 60s. And, you know, anytime you see a history documentary about the quote-unquote civil rights marches in Birmingham and whatnot, you know, it's all portraying the police officers sicking dogs on everybody, turning hoses on everybody, and all this other beating them with nightsticks. This fella whose dad was a police officer back then, he told me, he said, look, it's all a bunch of crap. He said, that's all they showed. He said, the only ones that they turned the hoses on or that they sicked the dogs on or that they had to beat with clubs were the ones who were throwing bricks through windows and trying to steal stuff and cause trouble. The ones that wanted to march peacefully down Fourth Avenue in Birmingham were fine to let them march down Fourth Avenue. But the media took the troublemakers, you know, and the dealing with the troublemakers and made that look like that's the way everybody in the South treats black people just for walking down the street. And it's nothing but a lie.
The media has been the mortal enemy of truth and the white people in most Western nations for at least since the Second World War. You know, the way, and there were so many people who did not live in the South, like where I was in Canada, and if all you did was go by the media, you would have a very bad opinion of Sheriff Bull Connors, oh, that horrible man beating those poor Negroes who were only marching for civil rights or whatever. That's why, you know, we have to be careful of managed news. I particularly worry, not to change topics, but about this war of Israeli aggression and American aggression against Iran. There's so many things on the internet. Some are true. Some, I don't know. For instance, that for the last almost 3 weeks, I've read that Benjamin Netanyahu is dead. And yet you see him almost every other night on the TV, yapping away and issuing more threats against the world. He wants to put out a statement a couple of days ago that he wanted to we're coming after you, anybody who criticizes Israel. Well, he's going to have to come after an awful lot of people. But, you know, but we have not been well served by most of our media.
No, they are, you know, here in America, for a long time, people have used the term, they're the fourth estate, which basically means they're the propaganda arm of the government. And, you know, there've been some exposés done to show that, you can tune into the newscast anywhere in the U.S., where they're talking about a particular topic. And every single one, whether it's in a small town, whether it's in a big city, whether it's north, south, east, west, they all repeat the same script over and over and over again. There's no objectivity. There's no trying to really report what's going on. It's simply parroting a narrative that they've been told to parrot. And as you were mentioning about Netanyahu supposedly being dead, you know, the world we live in now, where artificial intelligence is becoming a more prevalent thing, seems like every day, you really don't know what to believe. You know, there used to be a joke about who you going to believe, me or your lying eyes. You know, and now you're unfortunately, your eyes do lie to you because, you don't know whether you're looking at something authentic or something created by somebody in a computer. So it's getting more and more difficult to discern what's what.
We got to go to our last break at the second hour, guys. Y'all are doing a marvelous job. Can't wait to chime in, ask you guys a question when we come back. But folks, this is the last break. The second hour is a short break, about 2 minutes, since you don't have very long. So it'll be late coming back.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Hey, dear Blood River Radio family. We were talking about during the break just now. I was asking Paul and Mark to respond to a question, to an item that Dr. Hill brought up on First Hour. There's several articles on American Freedom News, the great online newspaper that Don Watson puts out. The question is asked, is Netanyahu dead? Are the Israelis losing bad? Is the United States losing bad? And one question is, will the international Jew / Israel, will they resort to the nuke, the nuclear bomb? God, I was setting off Armageddon. That's one question I was going to ask these fellows. Another one, is Israel going to disappear because of this war? Is the EU going to disappear? Will NATO cease to exist? What's going to come up to these wars? I guess, Mark, since you were on with Dr. Hill the first hour, you heard him talk about that. I will start with you.
Okay. Well, number one, the secular Zionist state of Israel is run by evil people, and so I wouldn't put anything past them as far as using a nuclear weapon on whoever they think their enemy is. I think that's about as likely to happen as anything. It's got a good chance of happening if things are really going bad for them, as you phrased the question. I would love to see an end to the European Union, just as I would like to see an end to the American Union, and for the same reasons, is because they've both become tyrannical and overbearing and have overstepped their bounds on occasion after occasion after occasion, and they have ceased. Long since ceased to perform the functions for which they were instituted. I would even go so far as to say I would even like to see the artificial nation states of Germany and France and Spain and Italy broken back up into the five or six separate kingdoms that they were before this trend toward a violently unified nation state became a trend back in the middle of the 19th century. I think it would make for a much more peaceful world. Big artificial nation states like the unified Germany, like the United States, they're capable of waging war and causing mischief on a much grander scale than they could if it was back to Prussia and Saxony and Bavaria. And they were all separate, and Italy was broken up into its original kingdoms, and Spain the same way. There'd be a lot, the ability to cause trouble to your neighbors would be greatly diminished because you just wouldn't have the financial wherewithal to be able to do it. Back in the Middle Ages, when that was the way Christendom was divided up, When there did turn out to be a war, it was very limited and it didn't last very long. But you come into the era of the artificial nation state and you look at World War I, World War II, and all that. I mean, protracted events that killed millions of people. And before the unification of all these various independent kingdoms took place, something like that was unheard of. People couldn't even conceive it.
I never thought of it that way, but it's obvious that, like, say for instance, the United States was busted up, and you had the original Confederate states, and you had the Midwest, you had the Northeast, and the South could not possibly come up with the money, the man, the material. Not the South would want to, that the whole United States could, to wage war, and a much more dangerous war, much more evil, broad. A world war capable of wiping out the entire generations. But I think he's got a point there, Paul. What do you think?
Well, much of the 19th century in Europe was spent where nationalities were trying to get together. They were sometimes being separated into little dukedoms or kingdoms or duchies and so on. They wanted to unite in a nation. That's what happened in Italy, and that's what happened in Germany. I don't see anything wrong with people of the same background wanting to be united rather than being divided into umpteen little units. I do get Mark's point, but I don't think I agree with that.
I guess you could say on the other side of the coin, I guess you could say, well, if Saxony and Bavaria and Prussia, as an example, did unite, then they would have they would be a greater deterrent to somebody, say, coming from the Soviet Union, or they would be stronger together. I can see both sides of the point. Yeah, I can see both sides. Matter of fact, go ahead, Mark.
That's true, Eddie. But cooperation for mutual self-defense could be accomplished through treaties without necessarily unifying everybody under one umbrella. Bavaria could still be Bavaria. Prussia could still be Prussia. They could work together in times of emergency or crisis, but otherwise they live their lives the way they want to. I think I see where Paul is coming from, and I think it's difficult for most people who have been born in the last 100 years or so, 150 years, to imagine a world different from the one that we inherited, which is all these large, artificially cobbled together nation states. But, you know, I know people who've been to Germany and France and other European countries, and still to this day, even though Germany is this one united artificial nation state, the people in Bavaria are different from the people from Prussia, and they're different from the people from Saxony.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, they religiously, culturally, architecturally, I mean, you know, Bavaria is, has always stayed predominantly Roman Catholic, while the rest of Germany went on the Lutheran side. You know, and it's just, it's the same thing we have here in America. Here in the South, we don't have anything in common with people in New England, and vice versa. You know, and we certainly don't have anything in common with people out west or you know, up in the Midwest. There might be slight overlaps on certain things, but for the most part, we're very different people. And to me, it just it makes more sense for us to divide things up to where, as we were talking about before, Paul, where the people are homogenous in every way possible, culturally, socially, racially, you know, economically, religiously, and so forth, and then we can get back to those high trust societies that we all miss, you know, and we could find ways to be good neighbors with one another, and again, like I said before, in times of a crisis, if somebody tried to come over here and invade, that's not to say we couldn't cooperate with one another militarily, but on a day-to-day basis, we live and govern ourselves the way we want. New England does the same. Midwest does the same. You know, that was the way the world operated for most of recorded human history, with a few exceptions of the Roman Empire or the Greek Empire. But, you know, so we're a blip on the radar screen in organizing society in that way. For most of human history, it was exactly the opposite.
What you're saying, except like we're about to be of the Articles of Confederation, Mark.
Well, definitely smaller units would be easier for citizens to have control. In a big country like the United States, 330 million people, it's vast. The bureaucracy is huge. Politics is remote. It's hard to control. In a smaller unit, I can see the citizen would have more control, which is good.
Yeah. You know, the average person who's got a beef with what they're doing in Washington, D.C., can't take off a week from work and travel all the way up to Washington, D.C. and join in a protest. And of course, what good do they do anyway? The sons of bitches don't pay any attention to you. They laugh at you while you're holding your sign out in front of the White House. But, you know, I can travel to Montgomery, to the state capitol, and see my representative there a whole lot easier. I can do that in a half a day. So you're right. The smaller the polity is, the more responsive it has to be to the wishes and needs of the people. The way it is right now here in the U.S., we here in Alabama and Louisiana and Arkansas, I mean, we're flyover country. What happens on the West Coast and the East Coast up in New England, that's what drives the whole country. And you know, the rest of us who don't want all of that mess, we have to put up with it.
And there's no way on earth people in Mississippi, Tennessee, and Alabama are ever going to be able to look like what's going on in California and Minnesota. It's just not working anymore. Anyway, guys, we've run completely out of time. Thank you. You meant so much for coming on. I couldn't possibly do this without you, people like you. I just can't say enough good about you two, Ben. Paul, you be careful over there. I hope you get back to Canada safely. And Mark, Hope you finish having a nice weekend, both of y'all. And I'll be staying in contact with both of y'all and hope you get back on the radio as soon as you can. Let me know when you get back home safely, Paul. People, we're going to transition to the third hour now, and we're going to pick up the bitter ender himself, Gene Andrews, the bitter ender, the still bitter, more bitter than ever, Gene Andrews. Be right back, folks. 4 minutes.